Hi, and welcome to Reader's Digest. I'm your volunteer reader, Tigger, and today I'm going to start with another in a series of articles I've been reading about scams. The more you're informed, hopefully the less you'll be hoodwinked. This particular article is on bank scams by Alina Bradford. Scams are on the rise. Financial scams aren't new by any means, but they have recently accelerated in frequency, thanks in part to the COVID-19 pandemic. According to the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, there was a whopping 70% increase in reports of fraud from 2020 to 2021. Imposter scams sit at the top of the list of types of scams perpetrated, and many imposter scams are also bank scams, essentially any fraud that affects your bank account. Why the increase? Well, during the pandemic, many people spent a lot more time in front of the computer, and many bought, sold, donated, or otherwise engaged in transactions that resulted in the perpetration of fraud, explained Salvatore LaScala, head of Global Financial Crimes, Fraud Investigations, and Compliance at Guidehouse, a global consultancy firm. Even though no one is immune to bank scams and wire fraud, financial institutions, online businesses, and retailers are ramping up their fraud prevention and detective services to protect your real and digital wallet. Law enforcement is also enhancing its tools every day to catch and stop online scams, Zelle scams, and more. You can help, too, by simply knowing the latest bank scams, including the red flags for phishing and how to avoid them. Okay, the first one is the overpayment scam. Overpayment scams are exactly what they sound like. The scammer presents you with a personal or business check for more money than what they owe you for goods or services. For example, the fraudster could give you a $4,500 check instead of the $2,000 you were expecting. But this isn't your lucky day. It's part of the scam. Next, the scammer asks you to wire or make an electronic transfer through Zelle or another ACH transfer service for the $2,500 difference. Next thing you know, the initial check they gave you will bounce, and they may have already received the money, wire, or Cash App payment for the difference before you or your bank realizes their check is no good. They get your $2,500, and you potentially get fees for depositing a check that bounced and your bank account closed for trying to cash a fraudulent check. How to avoid it? Avoid checks and only take payments through payment apps like PayPal or just ask for cash. If you do accept a check, have your bank call the check writer's bank to confirm the funds are available in their account. Never accept a payment that is more than what a person owes you unless you have written proof that the overpayment was some type of gratuity. Unsolicited check fraud scam. Receiving a check for no reason seems like a dream. Money for nothing is great, right? Hold on. Scam artists use this type of bank scam to trap us. How does it work? You get a check in the mail you weren't expecting from someone you don't know. They hope you don't notice the fine print under the signature line that reads something like this real example found by the Georgia Consumer Protection Division. Quote, simply endorse and cash or deposit this check at any bank to automatically enroll in X, starting with 30 days free. Unless you call to cancel during this trial, X will notify X, the issuer of your X credit card, to bill the $9.99 monthly membership fee, or then current fee, to your credit card each month, without your having to do anything further. You can cancel at any time after the trial period for a full refund of your current month's paid membership fee. The $2.50 check is yours to keep. Once the check is deposited, the fraudster will start charging your account. Often it's difficult or near impossible to cancel the charges. How to avoid it? Always look to see if there's any fine print anywhere on checks you receive. Take the check to your bank to find out if they can verify information on the sender. Before cashing any check, Google the sender's name with the word scam to see if any others have been targeted. Automatic withdrawal scam. Beware of free trials that require you to use a credit or debit card to sign up. Free products where you just pay for shipping are a way companies can trick you into signing up for this type of bank scam. They may include fine print to the effect that by getting the free product, you are signing up for a subscription. Once scamming companies have your card information, they will make it as hard as possible for you to cancel the free trial. Their website may direct you to email or call the customer service department to cancel, but somehow you never get through to a real person. How to avoid it? Only sign up for free trials from reputable companies. Remember, nothing's ever really free. Companies have underlying reasons for giving out freebies, even when it isn't to scam you. They may be collecting your personal information to sell to a data collector, for example. And remember to always read the fine print before you give companies your credit or debit card information. This next one is a loan scam. This type of bank scam often preys on those who are desperate for quick cash. You might see an online ad for a company that claims it can help you secure a government, bank, or other type of loan. If you reach out, these scammers may ask for a fee to help you and then provide less than helpful advice, charge you an application fee, or ask for personal information they can get to use to access to your bank account. Others have a 900 number that if you call, you'll end up paying for literally. You'll be charged, sometimes upwards of hundreds of dollars, for the call on your next phone bill. How to avoid it? Remember, there is no magic way to get approved for loans. Everything these people will tell you can easily be looked up in books or online. Even if the company looks legit, never pay an application fee for a loan. Loan application fees are illegal. The next is a phishing email and text scam. In a practice known as phishing, scammers send you an email, text message, or direct message on social media that at first glance looks like it's from your bank, credit card issuer, or other trusted company. Some may even have elaborate websites that look just like the site of the company they're impersonating. They'll encourage you to provide information or click a link that will lead to their scam site, where you're asked for your personal and financial information, such as your social security number or bank account information and passwords. Scammers then use what they gather to take out credit cards in your name and gain access to your bank accounts. These fraudulent phishing emails and texts are very good at mimicking your local bank, broker-dealer, retailer, or other typically large enterprises, says La Scala. This ability to mimic these trusted websites often tricks even the most internet savvy to let down their guard and give up passwords and social security numbers. Never click on a link in an email, text, or direct message. Always go to a company's site directly. Don't share any information through text, email, or direct message. Always contact a business's customer service to verify any correspondence. Remember, reputable companies will never ask you for your social security number or bank account information. Then there's a charity scam. Some of our most unfortunate frauds occur when the fraudsters take advantage of our kindness and impersonate charity, says La Scala. It is very simple to set up a would-be charitable event, float it out onto a social platform, and pull people's heartstrings. Fraudsters have even stooped so low as to run a false charity alongside a traumatic tragedy, like a Category 4 hurricane, or horrific school shooting, or a fallen first responder. It's natural to want to help people in these circumstances, which is why they make for fertile ground for fraudsters, La Scala says. These perpetrators often use sites such as GoFundMe, Meta, and PayPal. As these sites are wising up to fraudulent practices, scammers are turning to smaller and less well-known platforms. How to avoid it? Only donate to GoFundMe pages of people you know personally. If you're donating to an organization, make sure it's legit. Stick with organizations that are well known and have been around for at least a few years. Think before you donate. Ask yourself, is this the best organization to help this cause? The employment scam. The dream jobs variation looks a lot less suspicious to victims because they usually don't ask for any money up front, according to La Scala. However, when the fraudster presents you with your dream job offer, they will collect onboarding information for your new imaginary employer and require you to provide personal information on tax forms and direct deposit authorization forms for your salary, among other things. From there, they've racked up all the information they need to steal your identity and tap out your bank account. How to avoid it? The next time you receive an email, letter, or phone call with a pay-to-play recruiter or a dream job offering, think twice, says La Scala. If a job sounds too good to be true, it probably is. Don't pay to find jobs. These people don't offer anything helpful, and there are plenty of free services to help. The lottery and award scam. Lottery and award scams come in different forms. Some send the target a message stating that you've won a prize and all that's needed is a shipping fee to receive it. Other scams ask for your bank account information so that the money can be deposited in your account, when all the scammers really want to do is take money out of your account. How to avoid it? Never pay a fee. Legitimate lotteries and companies with contests won't charge a fee. If you don't remember entering a contest, you probably didn't win it. Research the contest before you reply. If the person claims to be from the Federal Sweepstakes Board, remember, there's no such thing. The government doesn't oversee sweepstakes. Ask the caller to tell you what your winning lottery ticket numbers are. If you don't have a ticket with those numbers, it's a scam. No matter what the type of bank scam, there are several ways to identify scammers and avoid them. Never give out your bank account information. Check your bank account regularly for suspicious transactions. Never give out your Social Security number. Avoid checks, especially from people you don't know. Take cash payments or payments through reliable cash apps. Don't click links in an email or text. Go to the website directly. This next article is on tipping, and it's actually called Tipflation: What You Should Know About the Increase in Tipping, by Laureen Elaine. Digital payments on touchscreens are leading to tipflation, but do we have to tip every time? It's customary to tip your server when dining at a restaurant, your hairstylist at the salon when getting a haircut, or the food delivery person when ordering dinner. Internationally, tipping etiquette varies by country, but here in the United States, we're used to tipping for a handful of services. Lately, this handful of tipping situations has become more like carrying an overstuffed tote bag. Often called tipflation, we're being asked to tip on transactions and services that are less traditional. What is tipflation? We're often left with a screen that asks if we'd like to leave a tip when doing things such as paying for a car wash or picking up a pre-made sandwich, sometimes for a service that didn't even involve a human. Donate to a fundraiser on GoFundMe, and below your dollar donation, the site asks if you'd like to tip the GoFundMe service. Similar to how the pandemic changed tipping etiquette, the way we pay for many things has also changed. The rise of contactless digital payments took off as a safer and easier way to pay, avoiding most face-to-face transactions. Diane Gottsman, a national etiquette expert and founder of the Proctor School of Texas, says the digital payment systems are just like the tip jar. The apps make it easy for those who don't use cash or need help calculating a percentage. However, it may also put pressure on the customer buying a cup of coffee or a deli sandwich, she said. Digital payments asking for a tip can either be a percentage of the total purchase price or a set dollar amount. Grab a coffee to go and you might see a screen prompting a $1, $2, $3 or a no-tip option. Gottsman mentions that while tipping is always considered a nice gesture, there are certain boundaries. For a $4 cup of coffee, it's unreasonable to leave a $4 chip, she says. Though there have never been set rules for how much to tip, most people follow general guidelines. According to a Discover survey of 999 Americans, 20% is the average tip in the U.S. for perfect service. Why tipflation is sparking some backlash. Tipping on more transactions isn't sitting well with everyone, though. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics says the Consumer Price Index for food saw a 10% increase between December 2021 and December 2022. With costs of goods and services already higher than ever because of inflation, shelling out extra money for a tip isn't part of everyone's budget. We're all accustomed to tipping for a sit-down dinner, but tipping has seeped into more transactions than ever, and that includes when we barely have any interaction with a person. Are we supposed to tip an electronic screen or a payment system when we had no interaction with a human? There's no hard and fast tipping etiquette when it comes to tipping on a digital screen. There's not a one-size-fits-all answer to using the tip app. The criteria should depend on the effort, the interaction, and your budget, Gottsman says. Gottsman also says customers shouldn't feel pressure to tip on every transaction. It's always nice to show gratitude and generosity by leaving a tip when possible, but a customer should not feel pressured or overwhelmed by the little piece of technology staring them in the face, she explained. If you're feeling awkward about selecting the no tip button, Gottsman recommends preparing some small cash beforehand to drop into the tip jar, or paying with cash and leaving the extra change. For a quick exchange over the counter where there was very little effort involved, a tip is optional. Feel extra to leave your extra change, $1 or $2, or customize your tip, Gottsman suggested. It's always worth remembering that leaving gratuity is a way to show your appreciation for good service. If the transaction doesn't involve a service, it might not warrant a financial reward. Well, that's enough seriousness. How about a fun article on the science behind red hair? This is by Amanda Gardner. What about redheads is so special? Here's what the science says about these rare-haired marvels. Redheads make up only about 2% of the world's population, but they have spawned an impressive body of folklore. They're temperamental, they're tied to the devil, they're witches, and they turn into vampires when they die, allegedly. As far as we know, none of these tales about the rarest hair color in the world are true, but redheads certainly occupy a unique place in human history. Red is such an extraordinarily important color for the human species, and it does get associated with passion and fire, says Jackie Collis Harvey, author of Red, A History of the Redhead. We combed through the research about this inherited trait and spoke to anthropologists and dermatologists alike about the stereotypes, myths, and fascinating tidbits about redheads. Some are weird facts about the human body, while others are just plain fascinating. Here are some fiery facts about our redheaded friends. Red hair is a recessive trait that's inherited. That means both parents must have this gene variant in order to contribute it to their offspring. But here's the important part. Those parents don't necessarily have to have red hair themselves to have a ginger offspring. Parents can be carriers for recessive genes, carrying instructions for making red hair hidden in their DNA. As a result, families that haven't had a redhead for decades may suddenly have a carrot-top baby. The MC1R, or melanocortin 1 receptor, gene determines hair, skin, and eye color. If you're a redhead, your gene has a mutation, or possibly several. That's why redheads are so rare. And if you have red hair and blue eyes, the rarest hair and color combination, the genetic stars were in alignment. According to evolutionary biology professor Mark Elgar, PhD, of the University of Melbourne, the odds of having both traits are around 0.17%. That's about 13 million people out of the 7.6 billion on Earth. But why is this combo so rare, especially if blue eyes aren't the rarest eye color? Many genes and gene variations play a role. But beyond that, both traits are recessive, and having two parents who can pass down two sets of recessive genes is very unlikely. Side note, my father was a blue-eyed redhead. Red may be the rarest color in the world, but the world is big, and redheads are here to stay. While they make up about 2% of the population, that means 158 million gingers are walking the earth. Fun fact, the highest concentration of redheads at 10% is in Ireland. But just because they are rare doesn't mean these genes are being diluted. Even when you can't see recessive characteristics such as red hair, they're still a part of a person's DNA, even if the person is displaying dominant genes like brown hair and brown eyes, which means that it's perfectly plausible for red hair to rear its carrot top down the family line. There's no question that red-haired individuals are at a much higher risk for skin cancer than brown-haired individuals, confirms Gregory Papadis, D.O., a Denver-based dermatologist and past president of the Colorado Dermatologic Society. This includes melanoma, cancer that starts in the cells that produce melanin and potentially the most serious of skin cancers. Unlike other hair colors, redheads carry two copies of the MC1R gene, which governs the production of melanin and helps determine your hair, skin, and eye coloring. The MCIR gene informs the cells that create melanin to make you melanin, usually associated with darker hair and skin, or pheomelanin, usually associated with lighter hair and fairer skin. Melanin works as a shock absorber, protecting you from ultraviolet light. It's a person's innate sunscreen, says Papadis. In redheads, the MC1R gene mutates and causes melanocytes to primarily make the reddish pigment, pheomelanin. And because redheads have higher levels of pheomelanin, they're more susceptible to damage from the sun. According to a large review published in PLOS 1 in 2017, female redheads have a higher risk of gynecological cancers, such as cervical, uterine, and ovarian cancer. The authors of the study speculated that the increased risk was related to being exposed to higher levels of estrogen before birth. Prenatal estrogen influences not only the emergence of certain medical conditions, but also the development of certain hair and eye colors, particularly red hair. Estrogen creates a predisposition to certain types of cancer, and it looks like there's a three-way relationship between being a woman, having red hair, and having these diseases, says Peter Frost, PhD, an anthropologist who studies the role of sexual selection in shaping visible human traits. A 2016 study in Current Biology found that people who had two copies of the MC1R gene appeared as many as 2 years older than people who did not hold both copies. According to the authors, this was about the same as the effect of smoking on perceived age. The link between red hair and aging had nothing to do with skin damage from too much sun exposure, which produces wrinkles and dark spots, as you might expect. Instead, the gene variant seemed to be connected with pathways that govern sagging skin, among other things. According to the authors, this is the first evidence of a genetic basis for perceived age. Whether or not it will lead to the fountain of youth is another question. Several studies have found that women with red hair have a higher pain threshold. The pain threshold is the limit from where you don't feel anything to where you just start to feel pain, explains David Fisher, MD, PhD, Chief of Dermatology at Massachusetts General Hospital, who has conducted a number of studies on red-haired individuals. A 2021 study, co-authored by Dr. Fisher, sheds light on why this is. The research involved red-haired mice, which possess similar gene variants as humans, and indicated that the gene responsible for red hair is also involved in regulating expression of factors that govern certain pain sensations. The simple explanation is that the redhead's melanocytes release factors that effectively favor the signals to the brain that say don't feel pain over feel pain. One day, he adds, these findings may lead to pain-relieving medications that are safer than those on the market. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today's Reader's Digest, so we'll finish up the article next week. Thank you for listening. My name is Tigger. Stay tuned for more great programming on Sun Sounds.